Shalom. I'm Eddie Chumniff, Hebraic Heritage Ministries, and we welcome you to this week's Focus Israel Report. In this week's report, we're going to be explaining to you the details behind U.S. President Barack Obama fulfilling the prophetic Kiss of Esau through his support of UN Security Council Resolution 2334, which condemns the existence of Jewish homes in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, making it international law that these areas are illegally occupied Palestinian lands, which effectively calls for the dividing of the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. Wherein, from the passage of this UN Security Council resolution, it now makes Jews living in these areas, which include the Mount of Olives, the Western Wall, and the Old City of Jerusalem, being regarded as illegally occupied Palestinian lands and thus a violation of international law. So what is the prophetic kiss of Esau? It is a kiss of betrayal. Historically, it is associated when Jacob was instructed by the God of Israel to return to the land of Israel after living with Laban for 20 years. We find this in Genesis chapter 31, verses 1 and 2, and verse 41. When Jacob returned to the land of Israel, he encountered Esau. Being afraid that Esau wanted to kill him, Jacob tried to appease Esau. In Genesis chapter 32, verses 3 and 6, it is written, "And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, unto the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, Thus shall you speak unto my lord Esau. Your servant Jacob says thus, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now, and I have oxen and donkeys, flocks and men servants and women servants, and I have sent to tell my lord that I might find grace in your sight. And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, We came to your brother Esau, and also he came to meet you. And he did so with 400 men. When Jacob saw that Esau had with him 400 men, Jacob was afraid for his life and the life of his family. In Genesis chapter 32, verse 7, it is written, Then Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. It is from Jacob's encounter with Esau and Jacob being afraid for his life and the life of his family in which Jeremiah speaks about the events associated with the end of days using the prophetic term Jacob's trouble. Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 7. It is when Jacob meets with Esau and they embrace is when we learn about the kiss of Esau. In Genesis 33 verse 4 it is written, And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. You cannot see the significance of the kiss of Esau, the kiss of betrayal, by reading the verse in English. However, the kiss of Esau is seen in the Hebrew. In a Torah scroll over the phrase, and he kissed him, there are special dots over the word. In a Torah scroll, it would look like this. The dots are over the Hebrew word. As explained by the rabbis, the dots are meant to be a warning regarding Esau's embrace of Jacob. It is prophetic. The dots are meant to represent teeth marks. The teeth marks represent a heart attitude of hate toward Jacob. It represents insincerity and betrayal. Outwardly, it looks like Esau was being friendly toward Jacob. However, in the heart of Esau, he hated Jacob and wanted to betray him and even eventually kill him. The kiss of betrayal is prophetic of what Esau's seed would do to Jacob in the time of the coming of the Messiah and in the end of days. There is this major spiritual principle that what happens to Israel happens to the Messiah, and what happens to the Messiah happens to Israel. Next, we're going to explain another very important biblical principle to help us gain an even deeper insight into the prophetic kiss of Esau. It is based upon the principle that what happens to Israel happens to the Messiah, and what happens to the Messiah happens to Israel. After Yeshua made covenant with Abraham in Genesis chapter 15, this covenant was extended to Isaac and Jacob and then to Jacob's family. Because of a famine in the land of Canaan, Jacob and his family went to Egypt. Based upon the covenant promise that Yeshua made with Abraham, Jacob was redeemed from Egypt. In Genesis chapter 15, verses 13 and 14, it is written, And he said unto Abram, Know of a surety that your seed will be a stranger in a land that is not theirs, and will serve them, and will afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom they will serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great substance. In Egypt, Yeshua redeemed his firstborn son, Jacob. In Exodus chapter 4, verse 22, it is written, And you shall say unto Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, Israel is my son, even my firstborn. So what happened to Jacob, Israel, is prophetic of what happens to Yeshua the Messiah. Yeshua was born in Bethlehem, Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. When Herod heard that the Messiah of Israel had been born, he was troubled. In Matthew chapter 2, verse 3, it is written, when Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled in all Jerusalem with him. As a result, Herod wanted to kill the baby Yeshua, so that he would not be a threat to him in later life. However, an angel of the Lord instructed Mary and Joseph to flee to Egypt until the death of Herod. In Matthew chapter 2, verses 13 and 14, it is written, and when they departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise and take the young child and his mother and flee into Egypt, and you will be there until I bring you word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed into Egypt. When Herod died, Mary and Joseph returned to the land of Israel. When they did, we are told it was in fulfillment of Hosea chapter 11, verse 1. In Matthew chapter 2, verse 15, it is written, and it was there until the death of Herod that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt have I called my son. Hosea chapter 11, verse 1 doesn't literally speak about the Messiah. It speaks about Jacob's family who went to Egypt and was redeemed from Egypt. In Hosea chapter 11, verse 1, it is written, when Israel was a child, then I loved him, and I called my son out of Egypt. However, Hosea chapter 11, verse 1 does apply to the Messiah, because in the volume of the book, it is written of him. Psalm chapter 40 and verse 7. It is taught by the rabbis that the entire Torah is written about the Messiah. Therefore, what happens to Israel when Jacob was redeemed from Egypt happens to the Messiah. Furthermore, what happens to the Messiah happens to Israel in the end of days. After Yeshua had his Last Supper, which was a Passover meal, he was betrayed by Judas with a kiss. In Matthew chapter 26, verses 47 through 49, it is written, and while he spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude, with swords and staves, from the chief priests and the elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, whomsoever I shall kiss, the same is he. Hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Yeshua and said, hail, Master, and kissed him. The betrayal of Yeshua by Judas was by a kiss. This is the prophetic kiss of Esau. After the prophetic kiss of Esau, Yeshua was put on trial and falsely accused. From being falsely accused, he was sentenced to death. So, what happened to Yeshua is prophetic of what will happen to Israel in the end of days. Currently, Israel is being falsely accused by the Palestinians, the United States, and Europe over the issue of Jews who they claim are living in the West Bank and East Jerusalem illegally. The world regards the West Bank and East Jerusalem as occupied Palestinian territory. For many years, the United States protected Israel from one-sided resolutions at the UN Security Council. They would do so by using their veto when any nation wanted to impose a solution regarding the Israeli-Palestinian peace process. This included when any nation wanted to condemn Jewish building in the West Bank and East Jerusalem by declaring them to be illegal. In February 2011, the U.S. vetoed such a resolution condemning the Jewish settlements. In December 2014, the United States used its influence to prevent recognition of a Palestinian state at the UN Security Council. However, on December the 23rd, the United States failed to prevent a UN Security Council resolution which specified that Jewish homes in the West Bank and East Jerusalem were illegal. In doing so, these lands were labeled as occupied Palestinian territory. In doing so, the United States reversed its policy to veto any UN Security Council resolution which made a final judgment over disputed issues intended to be resolved through direct negotiations. As a result, the United States failed to protect Israel. Therefore, Israel felt betrayed by the United States. This betrayal is the fulfillment of the prophetic kiss of Esau. As a result, Israel is seen by the international community as being in violation of international law because of the existence of Jewish homes in the West Bank and East Jerusalem. Israel is being put on trial on the world stage over the issue. Israel is being falsely accused by the nations and will continue to be falsely accused. Judging Israel to be guilty, the nations will want to punish Israel in a harsher way in the future. In effect, the modern-day state of Israel is being crucified by the nations. By being falsely accuse the punishments and isolation from the nations upon Israel will create the greatest crisis in its modern history. It will bring about the events of the Great Tribulation. In the natural, the crisis will begin to look like the end of the modern-day Jewish state. However, just when it looks hopeless, the Messiah of Israel, even Yeshua HaMashiach, will intervene and judge the nations. While judging the nations, Yeshua will gather the 12 tribes of Israel and end their exile. In doing so, Yeshua will unite Joseph and Judah upon the mountains of Israel. Ezekiel chapter 37, verses 15 through 28. With the coming of the Messiah and the end of the exile of the 12 tribes of Israel, Israel will experience the final redemption. In doing so, Israel will be quote-unquote resurrected and quote-unquote raised to glory, just like Yeshua. Glorified Israel will reign with Yeshua after he sets his feet on the Mount of Olives, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 4. Afterwards, Yeshua will set up his kingdom and teach his Torah to all nations from Jerusalem, Isaiah chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. So how did this prophetic kiss of Esau happen? So what were the recent events which led to Obama's betrayal of Israel and the fulfillment of the prophetic kiss of Esau? The Israeli government has publicly accused the Obama administration of colluding with its drafters of UN Security Council Resolution 2334, which condemned Jewish homes being built in the West Bank and East Jerusalem, to ensure that the resolution had just the right language so that the United States would not veto the measure. In Matthew chapter 26, verses 14 through 16, it is written, "Then one of the 12, called Judas Iscariot, went unto the chief priests and said unto them, What will you give me? And I will deliver him unto you. And they made a covenant with him for 30 pieces of silver. And from that time he sought opportunity to betray him." So it was not only Judas that was involved in betraying Yeshua, but there were others with him. Matthew chapter 26, verse 4. "And they consulted that they may take Yeshua subtly and kill him." So that which happened to Yeshua then happens to Israel. The United States betrayed Israel just like Judas. However, there were others involved that made this possible besides the United States. So what are the details of the story? U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry visited New Zealand on November the 13th, shortly after the U.S. presidential election, and took part in deep conversations over how its government, which holds a non-permanent seat on the UN Security Council until the end of December, could engage in a UN-related initiative on the Middle East peace process. After the talks, New Zealand Foreign Minister Murray McCauley even raised the possibility of the United States or New Zealand sponsoring together a UN Security Council resolution. McCauley said, "It is a conversation we are engaged in deeply, and we spent some time talking to Secretary Kerry about where the U.S. might go on this. It is something that is still in play. I think there are some very important decisions that the Obama administration is going to have to make in its lame duck period, that is, before Obama leaves office on January the 20th, on this issue." After Kerry meeting with New Zealand, then the United States met with the Palestinians in Washington, D.C. on December the 12th. The details are as follows. Meanwhile, a high-level Palestinian delegation led by Senior Palestinian negotiator Saab Erekat met with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry at the U.S. State Department on December the 12th. The delegation included the future Palestinian ambassador to the United States, as well as a number of high-level officials from Abbas's Fatah Party and from the Palestinian Liberation Organization. The main item on the agenda was a U.N. Security Council resolution initially written by the Palestinians. The Palestinian Authority was interested in coming to an understanding with the outgoing administration of U.S. President Barack Obama that would avoid an American veto of a U.N. Security Council resolution on Israeli settlements. Before the meeting, a senior official in President Abbas's office said that the Palestinian Authority sensed that the Obama administration would not accept the existing Palestinian draft resolution, as portions of it will have to be amended in an effort to avoid an American veto at the Security Council. He said, "The key question will be the position position of the outgoing U.S. administration. We are hoping that Obama will take one real decision on behalf of the Palestinians before he leaves the White House, he said. It was believed that if the Palestinians were prepared, in contrast to the past, to be pragmatic and to soften some sections of the draft, then there was a real chance that Obama would refrain from casting a veto of the resolution, the diplomat said. If the Palestinians act wisely and rationally, then they have a chance, he said. A senior Western diplomat said that the most contentious clause in the UN Security Council resolution calls for sanctions against Israel, provides a timetable for negotiations, and mentions the 1967 borders, but makes no mention of the potential for land swaps between Israel and Palestine. After the meeting, a joint statement by the U.S.-Palestinian Political Dialogue said that PLO Secretary General Saab Erekat and U.S. Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Near Eastern Affairs Stuart Jones met to discuss a number of issues related to the Palestinian-Israeli conflict in the broader Middle East. The delegations reportedly discussed the PLO's longstanding commitment to nonviolence and the two-state solution, which they described as the only way to achieve an enduring peace that meets Israeli and Palestinian security needs and Palestinian aspirations for statehood and sovereignty, ending the occupation that began in 1967 and resolving all permanent status issues. As a part of events that went on in the background, perhaps you might say the conspiracy plan, New Zealand participated in a UN Security Council briefing regarding the Israeli-Palestinian peace process on December the 16th. New Zealand had for several months been considering a draft resolution focused on preserving the two-state solution. In early December, New Zealand shared a new UN Security Council draft text with council members, which was discussed at an informal meeting on December the 13th. The draft reiterates the vision of a region where Israel and Palestine live in peace with secure and recognized borders and declares that the two-state solution is the only way to achieve an enduring peace. It calls upon both parties to establish a firm timetable for their early return to negotiations and to refrain from setting preconditions for the resumption of negotiations. It further calls on the parties to take action related to the three major impediments to a lasting peace and two-state solution outlined by the July 2016 report of the Middle East Quartet, and that is settlements, violence and incitement, and the Gaza Strip. New Zealand has been consulting with the parties as well as the United States on the draft and hope to allow the Palestinians to pursue their own draft resolution on settlements prior to presenting their initiative. However, with New Zealand and several other interested members leaving the council on December the 31st, New Zealand decided it could no longer postpone a discussion on action on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. These members also view the period before the inauguration of the new U.S. president on January the 20th as a rare window during which the outgoing President Barack Obama may allow the adoption of a resolution on this highly contentious issue. The draft, also seen by the Jerusalem Post, declares that the two-state solution is the only way to achieve an enduring peace that meets Israeli security needs and Palestinian aspirations for statehood and sovereignty, ending the occupation that began in 1967 and resolving all permanent status issues. The proposed UN Security Council draft by New Zealand calls for a firm timetable for an early return to negotiations and for refraining from setting preconditions for the resumption of talks. Likewise, it calls for a cessation of Israeli settlement activity as well as active and sustained Palestinian leadership to deter incitement to violence against Israeli civilians. Regarding terrorism, the New Zealand draft calls for an end to all acts of terrorism being perpetuated against both Israelis and Palestinian civilians. It also calls for an end to hostile actions and rocket fire from the Gaza Strip. Likewise, it calls for both parties to refrain from questioning the integrity or commitment of the other party or its leaders. Next, in addition to Judas, others being involved in betrayal betraying Yeshua, they sought for false witnesses against him. In Matthew chapter 26, verse 60, it is written, "Though many false witnesses came, yet found they none. And at last came two false witnesses." So now what happened to the Messiah is going to happen to Israel. The first witness or agent of the UN Security Council resolution was Egypt, who submitted a UN Security Council resolution condemning Jewish settlements on behalf of the Palestinians on December the 22nd. The original Palestinian draft of a potential UN Security Council resolution condemning Jewish settlements was amended. The Egyptians coordinated on the language of the submitted resolution with the Palestinian Authority. The amended version was presented by Egypt on behalf of the Palestinians on December the 22nd. After Egypt put their UN Security Council resolution on the table for a proposed vote, prior to that vote, due to pressure from Israel and U.S. President-elect Donald Trump, they withdrew their resolution. The details are as follows. Just hours before the scheduled vote, the Egyptian government pulled its own draft due to pressure from the Israeli government. After Israel was not able to get assurances from U.S. President Barack Obama that he would veto the resolution, Israel officials approached U.S. President-elect Donald Trump to assist them in thwarting the anti-settlement UN Security Council resolution. Israel, quote-unquote, implored the Obama administration not to go ahead and allow the Egyptian-drafted anti-settlement resolution pass by not using its veto, and told them that if they did, Israel would have no choice but to reach out to President-elect Trump, the source said. In response, President-elect Donald Trump called publicly and privately for a vote of the UN Security Council resolution. An Israeli official said, "We did reach out to the President-elect and are deeply appreciative that he weighed in, which was not a simple thing to do." Trump wrote on his Facebook account, "As the United States has long maintained, peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians will only come through direct negotiations between the parties and not through the imposition of terms by the United Nations. This puts Israel in a very poor negotiating position and is extremely unfair to all Israelis." Trump also spoke to Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi about the UN draft resolution, an Egyptian official said. During the call, they discussed regional affairs and developments in the Middle East, and in that context, the draft resolution in front of the Security Council on Israeli settlements, the official said. The presidents agreed on the importance of affording the new U.S. administration the full chance to deal with all dimensions of the Palestinian case with a view of achieving a full and final settlement, he added. An Egyptian diplomatic source said that Egypt may have withdrawn the resolution in order to maintain positive ties with the incoming Trump administration. "We, the Arab states, are all looking for a way to ensure constructive relations with this new administration. It's not clear if this resolution helps that or if it might even hinder," the source said. Israel ambassador to the UN, Danny Danone, said that his government was deploying diplomatic efforts on all fronts to ensure that this disgraceful resolution will not pass in the Security Council. Therefore, given the Israeli pressure, Egypt requested a delay in the vote to permit them to conduct an additional meeting of the Arab League's foreign ministers to work on the resolution's wording. What historically happened to Yeshua is that Yeshua was betrayed by Judas when Judas gave a sign of the betrayal. In Matthew chapter 26, verse 48, it is written, "Now he that betrayed him, Judas, gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, the same is he. Hold him fast." This is prophetic of what happened to Israel, because the United States gave a sign to the other Security Council members after the Egyptian resolution was withdrawn that the United States would abstain from any potential vote. The United States had intended to allow the UN Security Council to approve a resolution demanding an end to Israeli settlement building, two Western officials said. The two Western officials said President Barack Obama had intended to abstain from the vote. Israeli officials said that Obama wanted to abstain from the vote because of his frustration over the stalled peace process. NBC News in the USA and Reuters also reported that Obama planned to abstain from the vote. After Egypt initially came forward with its resolution condemning Israeli settlements, given that they withdrew the resolution, next came other witnesses to present the resolution. They were four other members of the the UN Security Council. New Zealand, Venezuela, Malaysia, and Senegal ask Egypt to clarify by midnight of December the 22nd whether it planned to call a vote on the anti-Israel settlement resolution. The four states said, in the event that Egypt decides that it cannot proceed to call for a vote on December the 23rd or does not provide a response by the deadline, those delegations reserve the right to table the draft and proceed to put it to vote as soon as possible. They said, the proposal for other delegations to take the lead would also help Egypt by relieving it of the burden of carrying this draft alone. The four states met on the morning of December the 23rd to decide how to proceed, diplomats said. At this point, Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu lobbied Obama to veto the anti-Israel settlement UN Security Council resolution. Just before the original scheduled vote on the Egyptian anti-Israel settlement resolution on December the 22nd, Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called on the United States to veto the resolution. In a video statement, the Israel Prime Minister implored the Obama administration to stand up in the UN and veto anti-Israel resolutions, designated that position one of the great pillars of the U.S.-Israel alliance. I hope that the U.S. won't abandon this policy, he said. I hope it will abide by the principles set forth by President Obama himself in his speech in the UN in 2011, where he said that peace will come not through UN resolutions, but only through direct negotiations between the parties. And that's why this proposed resolution is bad. It's bad for Israel, it's bad for the United States, and it's bad for peace. Next, what happened to Yeshua after he was betrayed by Judas with a kiss, and there were other conspirators with him. And after two witnesses came forth to testify against Yeshua, then Pilate sat on his judgment seat and made a decision about the matter. In John chapter 19, verse 13, it is written, when Pilate therefore heard that saying, he brought Yeshua forth and sat him down on the judgment seat. Historically, Pilate represents the United States. And when Pilate, or the United States, heard that the anti-Israel settlement vote was being put on the table by the other witnesses, New Zealand, Venezuela, Malaysia, and Senegal, Pilate, who foreshadows the United States, made a decision about the matter. In Matthew chapter 27, verse 22, Pilate said unto them, what shall I do then? Pilate prophetically represents the United States, who then, given that the other 14 United Nations Security Council members voted for the UN resolution condemning Israeli settlements, had a decision of their own regarding what they would do about the resolution. Just as Pilate made his decision, the United States made theirs. The anti-Israel settlement bill was voted upon on December the 23rd and passed 14-0 with the United States abstaining. The UN Security Council voted on December the 23rd to adopt a resolution condemning Israeli settlement activity as illegal and demanded that Israel immediately and completely cease all settlement activities in the occupied Palestinian territory, including East Jerusalem. 14 out of the 15 voting members of the council voted in favor of the resolution, while none voted against. The United States chose to abstain instead of casting its veto, while simultaneously declaring Jewish homes in the West Bank and East Jerusalem as illegal. The passage of the resolution was met with applause by the UN Security Council members. Next, I'm going to share with you highlights of UN Security Council Resolution 2334, and it is as follows. The highlights of UN Security Council Resolution 2334 is that it condemned all measures aimed at altering the demographic composition, character, and status of the Palestinian territory occupied since 1967, including East Jerusalem. It reiterated its vision of a region where two democratic states, Israel and Palestine, live side by side in peace within secure and recognized borders. In point number one, it reaffirms that the establishment by Israel of settlements in the Palestinian territory occupied since 1967, including East Jerusalem, has no legal validity and constitutes a flagrant violation under international law. In point number three, it underlines that it will not recognize any changes to the June 4, 1967 borders, including with regard to Jerusalem, other than those agreed upon upon by the parties through negotiations. In points 1 and 3, this effectively called for the dividing of the land of Israel and the city of Jerusalem. This may well could be the fulfillment of Joel chapter 3 verse 2, which says the nations will divide the land of Israel, in Zechariah chapter 14 verse 2, which says that the nations will divide Jerusalem. In point number 5, it calls upon all states, bearing in mind paragraph 1 of this resolution, to distinguish in their relevant dealings between the territory of the state of Israel and the territories occupied since 1967. Point number 5 effectively makes it possible to permit boycotts of the West Bank and East Jerusalem of anything Jewish that is associated with those areas. Point number 8 calls upon all parties to continue in the interest of the promotion of peace and security to exert collective efforts to launch credible negotiations on all final status issues in the Middle East peace process and within the time frame specified by the Quartet in its statement of September the 21st, 2010. The Quartet's statement on September the 21st, 2010 said the following. The Quartet expresses its strong support for the resumption of Israeli-Palestinian negotiations, which can resolve all final status issues within 1 year. So point number 8 calls for a final status agreement to be agreed upon in 1 year. Could this be the fulfillment of the 70 weeks of Daniel, where one may interpret Daniel chapter 9 verse 24, the 70 weeks, as referring to 70 years of the last generation. And just as Messiah was cut off after 69 weeks, Israel is being cut off 69 years from 1948, counting the Feast of Shavuot. Given that the word weeks in Daniel chapter 9 verse 24, which in Hebrew is Shavuim, is in the male plural form. The female plural would be Shavuot, which is the name for the Feast of Weeks. So just as Yeshua was cut off after 69 weeks, this UN resolution is effectively cutting off Israel after 69 Shavuot, counting from when Israel became a nation in 1948. Daniel chapter 9 verse 27 specifies that a covenant will be confirmed for 1 week. In Hebrew, the confirming of the covenant is the Hebrew word gabor, which means to strengthen something that already exists. This UN resolution is strengthening the vote by the United Nations General Assembly on November the 29th, 1947. And in strengthening that UN General Assembly vote, which called for an Arab state and a Jewish state, making Jerusalem an international city, it calls for final status negotiations to be completed in 1 year. Could this be the fulfillment of the covenant that is made strong for 1 year? Next, I'm going to share with you 12 reasons why the U.S. should have vetoed UN Resolution 2334. Number 1, UN Resolution 2334 encourages Palestinian rejectionism and undermines negotiations. The resolution dangerously lacks giving any incentive to the Palestinians to come to the negotiating table. This will feed into the Palestinian strategy of preferring to deal with international institutions over bilateral talks with Israel. Contrary to its stated objective, therefore, the resolution will only push negotiations farther away. In this regard, we recall that in 2011, U.S. Ambassador to the United States Susan Rice vetoed a similar resolution on the grounds that it risks hardening the position of both sides and could encourage the parties to stay out of negotiations. She said it was unwise for this council to attempt to resolve the core issues that divide Israelis and Palestinians. Number 2, the resolution fuels Palestinian targeting of Israelis with boycott, divestment, and sanctions and international prosecutions. The resolution's appeal to all states to take action in paragraph 5 is a clear call to escalate campaigns seeking to boycott Israeli products, companies, and citizens. Certainly, the United Nations Human Rights Council will feel empowered to continue preparing its blacklist of Israeli companies that do business over the Green Line that is due in March. Meanwhile, the resolution's mandated reports by the Secretary General every 3 months will ensure constant activity. Number 3. Contrary to U.S. claims, this resolution fails to condemn Palestinian incitement. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power said after the vote that the U.S. would would not have let this resolution pass had it not also addressed counterproductive actions by the Palestinians, such as terrorism and incitement to violence. Yet this is exactly what happened. The resolution that was adopted mentions terrorism and incitement only in the abstract. Nowhere are these crimes attributed to the Palestinians. Whereas Israel is named and shamed throughout the text, the Palestinians get a free pass. Number 4. The resolution blames Israel as a major obstacle to peace, yet Palestinians evade responsibility. Despite the fact that the Palestinians refuse to negotiate without preconditions, refuse to negotiate even during Israel's 2009 and 2010 settlement freeze, rejected the Kerry framework principles, and are inciting to terrorism at the highest levels, they are spared in the resolution from any blame. Instead, the resolution accuses Israel alone of creating, with the settlements, a major obstacle to a just, lasting, and comprehensive peace. Number 5. It fails to distinguish individual Israeli settlements, thus losing the support of the Israeli mainstream. By ignoring the 2000 Clinton parameters, the Obama administration unwisely managed to alienate itself from the vast majority of the Israeli population and political parties who regard the Jewish quarter, the Western Wall, and Jewish neighborhoods in Eastern Jerusalem, such as Ramot and Gilo, as an integral part of Israel, all of which are defined in the resolution as occupied Palestinian territory. And likewise, the Israeli Jewish communities in the large settlement blocks, such as Gush Etzion, have for years been considered part of the Israeli consensus. The U.S. failure to distinguish between these and isolated remote settlements is what doomed the U.N. resolution to complete rejection by Israeli society as a whole. Number 6. It is offensive to Israel to call Jerusalem's Jewish holy sites occupied Palestinian territory. The resolution is offensive to Jews worldwide by absurdly defining the Jewish quarter of Jerusalem and the holiest Jewish sites of the Temple Mount and Western Wall as occupied Palestinian territory. Number 7. This resolution rewrites UN Resolution 242 passed in 1967. By injecting new language enshrining the June 4, 1967 lines, the resolution seeks to relitigate and rewrite UN Security Council Resolution 242 of November 1967, which is the cornerstone of Arab-Israeli peace negotiations over the past half century. That was endorsed by the Palestinians in the Oslo Accords, which calls for the right of every state to live in peace within secure and recognized boundaries, and for Israel to withdraw from territories occupied, not the territories occupied. Arthur Goldberg, former Supreme Court Justice and U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, when UN Resolution 242 was enacted, made clear that the text's notable omission in language on withdrawal are the words the, all, and the June 5th, 1967 lines. The choice of language was clear, he explained. There is lacking a declaration requiring Israel to withdraw from the or all of the territories occupied in it on and after June the 5th, 1967. Instead, the resolution stipulates withdrawal from occupied territories without defining the extent of the withdrawal, and it can be inferred from the incorporation of the words secure and recognized boundaries that the territorial adjustments to be made by the parties in their peace settlements could encompass less than a complete withdrawal of Israeli forces from occupied territories. Number 8. U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power's explanation of the U.S. abstention misstates longstanding U.S. policy. In explaining the U.S. vote, U.N. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power began by making reference to a 1982 quote from President Ronald Reagan opposing settlements, saying, "Our vote today is fully in line with the bipartisan history of how American presidents have approached the issue." In fact, what Samantha Power had to say was selective, excluding material statements by U.S. leaders rejecting the notion of a return to the 1949 armistice lines, what Israeli statesman Abba Ibn once called Auschwitz borders. For example, Power failed to quote the rest of President Reagan's statement, in which he said, "I have personally followed and supported Israel's heroic struggle for survival ever since the founding of the State of Israel 34 years ago. In the pre-1967 borders, Israel was barely 10 miles wide at its narrowest point. The bulk of Israel's population lived within artillery range of hostile Arab armies. I am not about to ask Israel to live that way again." Nor did Power quote President Lyndon Johnson, who said, "We are not the ones to say where other nations should draw lines between them that will ensure each the greatest security. It is clear, however, that a return to the situation of June 4th, 1967 will not bring peace. peace. There must be a secure and there must be recognized borders. Likewise, Power omitted Secretary of State Shultz's 1988 statement, saying, "The territorial issue needs to be addressed realistically. Israel will never negotiate from or return to the lines of partition or to the 1967 borders." And finally, the Clinton parameters of December 2000, which contemplates Israel annexation of large settlement blocks, are also ignored by this resolution. Number 9. The U.S. support of this resolution reneges on the U.S. commitments in the 2004 Bush-Sharon letters. By allowing the resolution's new language enshrining the June 4, 1967 lines, which are the 1949 Armistice